Okay, we're beginning here on Samach Vavon and Aleph, nine lines down. The Gemara here is continuing to search for an author or a position that would fit into the Tosefta that we brought from Mikvaot, in which the Tosefta stated that if an item is made into a kli first and then affixed to the ground, it retains its status as a kli and would be problematic for the waters then that came from that kli or that pipe into the mikveh. On the other hand, if one affixed the raw materials to the ground first, and then only afterwards carved out a kli from that, then that would be fine with regards to the din of mikveh, or the problem of maim shu'uvim. So the Mara had said, right after we had brought that braita, that lo Rabbi Eliezer velo Rabbanon, that neither Rabbi Eliezer nor the Rabbanon could be the authors of this braita. And the Gemara is now asking which Rabbi Eliezer and which Rabbanon are we speaking about that cannot be the authors of this braita? So, in essence, the Gemara keeps searching to see why there is a problem with the different possible Tanaim who could be the authors of this braita. The Gemara brought numerous machlokot between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim, and in each case shows why that machloket may not clarify for us who is the author of the case in Mikvaot. The Gemara continues to do that today with another case, which is Daf Shel Nachtomim, talking about a flat piece of wood of the baker's, Shekava'o Bikotel, that he now affixed to the wall. So you're starting out with a kli, and now you're affixing it to the wall. Rabbi Eliezer Mitaher, Rabbi Eliezer says it's no longer Mikabel Tuma, because now it is Mechubar the Karka, so even though it was a kli beforehand, that flat piece of wood, now that it's affixed to the wall, it becomes Mechubar the Karka, and it's Tahor. Chachamim Mitamim, on the other hand, the Chachamim say that it is Tamei, because they believe, since it was once a kli, it retains that status as a kli, even if after it's affixed to the wall. Now this Daf Shel Nachtomim, most explained like the Rabbeinu Gershom over here, that we're speaking about Nesesh Mitaknim Agava B'Lechem, a board upon which you set up the dough to put into the oven. So it is a staging board, or somewhere where they put the dough when they were putting the bread together or making the bread. So it is a pre-process board in which they prepare the challah to put into the oven. Maybe something similar to a pizza shovel, where they would make the pizza directly on that shovel and then put it into the oven. And so that would be what we're discussing over here. On the other hand, the Rishbam over here claims that the Daf Shel Nachtomim is actually a display case. It was a piece of wood that they used to put out on which they would display the baked goods that they wanted to sell. And that's what is called a Daf Shel Nachtomim. So the question is, once you have this kli that was used, when you affixed it to the wall, does that change its status? So we see here that Rabbi Lezer says, yes, it does change its status. The Chachamim say no. Mani, who's going to be the author of the Tosefta and Mikvot? He, Rabbi Eliezer, if you think it's Rabbi Lezer, afilu chakuko ulusof kovo. In this case here, it's a case where it was a kli already, and then after you affix it to the wall, it becomes mechuber the karko. So if that's the case, he can't fit into the Tosefta Mikvot, because even in a case of Chakako, he created the Kli, and then affixed it later, Rabbi Lesser would say that is considered to be Mechuber the Karka, and then it should be fine for the Mikvot. But the Tosefta and Mikvot says that's not the case. If you make the Kli first, and then only afterwards affix it to the ground, then it is Pasul the Mikvot. So Rabbi Lesser is obviously not the author, and once again, we fail to find the authorship. Rabbanon, Afilu Kavod, Sof Chakako, Nami. Even if you attached it to the wall up front and then carved the kli out, it would be problematic. The Rabbanon believe that affixing it to the wall has no bearing on the status of the kli. That's both whether it was a kli beforehand or it was a kli after you attached it. They think attaching it to the wall or attaching it to the ground has no impact. It is a kli, and if it is a kli, it retains that status whether it was a kli beforehand or if it only became a kli after it was already attached. So then again, the Rabbonon also cannot be the authors of the Tosefta, because they don't differentiate between whether it was first affixed, only affixed afterwards. They simply say that affixing it doesn't take away its status as a kli. Where it says, Olam Rabbi Eliezer hi. Now, Rabbi Eliezer is the author of that Tosefta in Mikvaot, and why is his opinion seemingly different over here, where he takes a kli and affixes it to the wall, and all of a sudden it becomes tahor? Whereby Mikvaot, he says that's a problem of Maim Shuvim. Says Vishaini Pshute Kliyates, Detuma de Rabbanan. The problem here is that you're dealing with Pshute Kliyates, flat pieces of wood, where their Tuma is only rabbinic in nature. So let's take a step back in terms of Tuma. There are two parshiot of Tuma in the Torah. One is found in Parshat Shmini, and the other one found in Bamidbar by the battle with Midian. In Parshat Shmini, when it describes items or kelim that become tamei, over there it says, Kliets, O Beged, O Or, O Sak. So it has a list of items that are Mikabel Tuma, and the Chachamim had a Hekesh, or a Limud from that, that Masak, that Mitaltel, Male Verekan, just like a sack is carried, whether it is full with merchandise or whether it's empty, and Af Kliets, so too Kliets. And an additional requirement over there is that have a Beit Kibul. It has a receptacle in which to capture things. And therefore, the Kli Eitz that is mentioned in that Pasuk in Shmini, subject to the or characteristics of a sack. So just like a sack has a Beit Kibul or receptacle to receive things, and it can be carried full and empty, so too a Kli Eitz only has a din in Tuma when it has a receptacle. Over here, we're speaking about a flat piece of wood, and therefore it does not qualify to be Mikabel Tuma. And that's what the Gemara says over here, that Pshutei Kliets, when you're talking about a flat piece of wood, then we're not talking about Tuma Min HaTorah, we're talking about Tuma Midirabanan. Now, if it was other materials that are mentioned in the Parsha of Midian, and over there the metals are what are mentioned there, Zahav, Kesef, and Nechoshet, metallic items are not subject to this Hekesh Desak. Therefore, metallic items don't have this requirement of having a Beit Kibul or whether Maleu Rekan. They simply are Mikabel Tuma, no matter what their size or shape is. And so that's what the Gemara is saying over here. We're speaking here about Pshutei Kliets. We're talking about a flat piece of wood. And therefore, this whole Machloket is a Machloket in a Din D'Rabbanan. And so what the Gemara is suggesting now is that Rabbi Eliezer is Mekil by Dafshel Nachtomim because of the fact that we're only talking about Tuma D'Rabbanan. Therefore, he says whether it was a kli up front or it was attached up front doesn't matter. In either case, being affixed to the wall will take away its status as a kli, and now it will become as if it's mechubar the karko, and that's why he says over here that they are tahor. But by the case of mikvaot, where we're speaking about a dindo uraita, over there he will be mechalek. He will differentiate between a case in which the kli already had a shame kli, and then you have fixed it to the ground. There won't lose its shame kli, and it will still have the status of a kli, and it will be a problem of maim shuvim. On the other hand, if it was affixed to the ground first and then carved out, there he would agree that it's considered to be mechubar the karka, and it wouldn't be a problem of maim shuvim. And in essence, the Gemara is saying is that mikvaot is a din d'oraita, dafshel nachtomim is a din d'rabbanan, and therefore over here, Rabbi Lezer was mekil by the dafshel nachtomim to say even if it was a kli first, when you affix it to the wall or to the ground, it has a din of mechubar the karko. Now, the fact that the Gemara here says that Kli Eitz has Tuma Derabanan, the Rashbam says that that's just the setup in the Gemara. It happens to not be true. That Pshutei Kli Eitz, not only are they not Mikabel Tuma Midoraita, they're not even Mikabel Tuma Midirabanan. And we're going to see that in the conclusion of the Gemara later on. And so the Rashbam says that this is just a setup or an interim stage in the question of the Gemara, but Lemaskana, it's just not true. That Pshutei Kliets, flat pieces of wood, are not Mikabel Tuma, because the only flat pieces of wood that are Mikabel Tuma are flat pieces of wood that are used for midras, which means either for sitting on, for laying on, for the support of a human being's weight. But otherwise, Pshutei Kliets aren't even Mikabel Tuma midrabanan. And so when the Gemara here says Pshutei Kliets Tuma derabanan, that's an interim stage, but it happens not to be true. Here there's a large Tosafot that disputes that claim of the Rashbam, and he suggests that that's not the way to deal with the situation over here, but rather v'yesh mefashim v'daf shel nachtomim af of shu shupliyish shutei kliets mekabel tuma midrabanan. Even though it's a flat piece of wood, it is mekabel tuma midrabanan. Kevin shu mishamesh adam v'et mishamshei adam, since it services individuals, and this is based on a Gemara in Menachot, where there the Gemara is speaking about the shulchan in the mikdash. And the fact that it is possibly Mikabel Tuma Midrabanan, or that flat pieces of wood are Mikabel Tuma Midrabanan, because they service people, or they service items that service people. And therefore, even if it's a Pshutei Kliets, and it doesn't have Tumat Midras associated with it, there still are certain Pshutei Kliets that are Mikabel Tuma Midrabanan. And that's what the Balei HaTosafot suggests over here, that the Gemara is saying that this Pshutei Kliets, since it's in service of individuals, it is Mikabel Tuma Midrabanan. There are those that say that Pshutei Kliyeitz, that service people, could even be Mikabel Tuma Midoraita, but over here, the Dafshan Achtomim would only have Tuma Midrabanan because it doesn't directly service the individual. He's not eating at this table. He's just using it either to display his wares or is using it in order to facilitate or prepare the bread that's going into the oven. And so therefore, even those that believe that Pshutei Kliyeitz can even reach a Tumah D'Oraita when they service individuals over here would agree that we're speaking about Tumah Midrabanan. So these Rishonim fundamentally disagree with the Rashbam and believe that Pshutei Kliyeitz do have a din of Tumah Midrabanan. And that's what the Gemara is suggesting over here, that this Daf Shel Nachtomim has a din of Tumah Midrabanan. Michlau, from that you would infer that She'iva D'Oraita, that Mayim She'uvim is a psul min haTorah, v'hakaymalon derabanan. Don't we know that mayim shuvim is only a problem of rabbinic nature? It is not a doraita Torah level problem. You just made a distinction that Rabbi Lezer's position with regards to the daf shel nachtomim is differentiated from that by the mikvaot, because you're suggesting that daf shel nachtomim is tumah derabanan, implying that mayim shuvim is a problem min haTorah. The problem is that we know that Mayim Shuvim is only a rabbinic problem and not a Doraita, not a Torah level problem. So now, when the Gemara says that Mayim Shuvim is Midrabanan, how literally do we take that? Some of the Rishonim read this at face value and suggest that Mayim Shuvim is literally Midrabanan, and that's what the Ri in the Tosafot suggests over here, which is that the Ri Nira, Dafilu Kulo She'uf, Derabanan. Anytime you're talking about a psul of Mayim Shuvim, it's completely rabbinic in nature, k'demashma tosefta mikvot, like is mentioned in the tosefta mikvot, and he brings proof to the fact that this inyan, or this issue of mayim shuvim, is completely rabbinic in nature. That means min haTorah, there is no problem whatsoever with mayim shuvim. That means if you filled up an entire mikvah with mayim shuvim, it would be fine min haTorah. The psul of mayim shuvim is completely rabbinic in nature, even though the Rashbam quotes a Torat Kohanim, which seems to indicate that that problem is the Oraita. Nevertheless, the Ri says that's an Asmachta Ba'alma. That's just a hint to this issue, the Rabbanan, in the Torah, but it's not literally an issue mid the Oraita. Although the Ri does concede, or does agree, that if you make a mikvah in Kelim, if you make a mikvah in something that is not in the ground, then you would have a problem mid the Oraita, because the requirement of the Torah is that it be a bor or mikveh mayim that is in the ground itself. So the Ri believes or takes the Gemara at face value here. When it says that mayim shuvim is the rabbanan, that means literally, mayim shuvim is never a problem. You could have made a mikveh out of taking barrels and barrels of water, pouring them into the ground and made a mikveh, and it would have been fine min haTorah. The rabbanan came along and were gozer on mayim shuvim to say it is pasul. The reason they were gozer on mayim shuvim is because of that problem that the Ri mentioned, that you can't go to the mikveh inside of a kli. You're only allowed to go into a mikveh that is in the ground. Therefore, they instituted that if you brought the water through kelim to the mikveh, people might think that it's okay to go to the mikveh or dip yourself inside of a kli. And that's why they said, mayim shuvim ar psulim midrabanan. But midoraita, they would have been completely fine. On the other hand, the Rashbam over here says, it depends. Mayim shuvim sometimes is pasul midoraita, sometimes is pasul midrabanan. And that is, if the mikveh is started out or is built out of mayim shuvim, that will cause a problem in terms of the mikveh midoraita. He quotes the Torat Kohanim that demands that the mayim be mei gishamim, or like mei ma'iyan, and that mayim shuvim would be problematic min haTorah, and that's because you built the mikveh, you started the mikveh with mayim shuvim. That's what he says over here. V'hainu taima d'midoraita hu d'be'inan mikveh mimayim kunasim lechatchila b'lo she'iva d'idkish d'mayan v'afilu nafal batar hachi shuvim b'lo beruba inami kama kama botil. What he says is that once you already have an established mikveh, then if mayim shuvim fall into it, then that's not a problem d'oraita. That's only a problem midirabanan. Because either the water that falls in there is batel berov, or we say that each drop that falls in there is batel. And given that, the mayim shuvim no longer are a problem d'oraita, but only a problem d'rabanan. And so what the Rashbam suggests is, if the mikveh is built out of mayim shuvim, you have a problem in a Torah. But what our Gemara is pointing out here is that the case in the Tosefta that we brought from Mikvaot is not a case where you're building a mikveh out of Mayim Shuvim, but rather a case where you're adding Mayim Shuvim to the mikveh, and he's midayik that out of the terminology that's there, which is poselet a mikveh, that Mayim Shuvim ruined the mikveh, which implies that there was already a mikveh in place, and then the Mayim Shuvim come, and they're causing a problem because they're being added to a kosher mikveh. So this has two aspects to the position of the Rashbam. One is that midoraita, min haTorah, there is a problem of Mayim Shuvim, but that's only when the base of the mikveh was built out of Mayim Shuvim. But once you have a mikveh that is either robe made out of Meg Shamim or entirely a kosher mikveh, then Mayim Shuvim only cause a problem midirabanan. The second piece of the Rashbam's position is that even a completely kosher mikveh can be ruined by Mayim Shuvim midirabanan. And that you can see in the Balei Tosafot, that the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with his brother and says the dafka b'mikveh chaser poslim mayim shuvim, that it's only in a case where you have a mikveh that is not fully 40 sa'ah yet can mayim shuvim cause a problem midrabanan. Aval mikveh shalem, once you have a full and kosher mikveh, kol mayim shuvim shvalam in poslim oto, you can add as much mayim shuvim as you want and it will never create a problem. And the Balei Tosafot says the Rabbeinu Tam has many proofs to his position. So despite the fact that the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam, the brothers agree that unlike the Ri, there is a psul of Mayim Shuvim de'oraita, but they do argue about where the psul of Mayim Shuvim affects the mikveh midrabanan. According to the Rashbam, it can even affect a completely kosher mikveh. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, it only affects the mikveh until it is a kosher mikveh. Once it's a kosher mikveh, it can't affect it. So now, the way that they're reading the Gemara over here is, v'hakayim elon de'rabanan. You're suggesting that Mayim Shuvim is a din de'oraita. It's only a din derabanan, not in general that it's a din derabanan, but in our case, when you're speaking about the Tosefta Mikvaot, that's clearly only an issue midrabanan. According to the Rashbam, it's because it's poselet a mikveh, which means you have an existing mikveh, which means even a full mikveh can be affected by the mayim shuvim. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, it means poselet a mikveh is a mikveh that is already rov or majority of mei mayan or mei gishamim. And now you're adding on the Mayim Shuvim on top of that to complete the mikveh to 40 sa'ah. That is posel the mikveh when it's part and parcel of it. Of course, if you start out with Mayim Shuvim, the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam believe that it is problematic. There are other shitot amongst the Rishonim that run somewhere between the extreme of the Ri, who says that there's no Mayim Shuvim midoraita, and the position the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam will believe that there is a problem of Mayim Shuvim midoraita. For instance, here, the Balei Tosafot quote, Rabbeinu Moshe mi Pontvaiza doche daf agav de shiva d'oraita hi bekarka tahor. That even though shiva is a problem d'oraita, if you pour it into the ground, then it is mitaheret. Once it hits the ground or touches the ground, it becomes fine. Mishum shiyav shar b'loham shecha, because it's impossible to pour water into the ground and not have it flow a little bit into the karka. Dechi naflu min akli l'ritzba shichalaka, because when it falls into the ground, which is smooth, mimshechei elech v'elech, the water moves around. And therefore it's considered as if it touched the ground, it flowed from the ground into the mikveh. So he says, yes, fundamentally, mayim shuvim are a problem de'oraita. But when you draw water and pour it into the ground, and then it flows into the mikveh, or moves around on the ground that you're putting it into, that already is makshirit to be fine. So you see here, he has a mix between the two positions, which says it's very hard to have mayim shuvim midoraita, even though conceptually there is such a case. And he says that the case will be a case where you put it into kelim, not when you put it into the karka. So you see additional opinions like that. The Rosh Mishantz is also quoted in the Balei Tosafot as distinguishing between types of kelim that you create the mayim shuvim with. So there are other opinions about this, but we just gave basically the two extreme opinions, which is the Ri, who suggests that there is no such thing as Mayim Shuvim midoraitas whatsoever, and that's what the Gemara says, Kaimelon de Rabbanan. And the Rishbam and the Rabbeinu Tam will believe that there is Mayim Shuvim de Oraita, but the case here particularly happens to be the Mayim Shuvim de Rabbanan, where we're dealing either with, according to the Rishbam, even a complete mikveh, or according to the Rabbeinu Tam, where you have Rov, Megishamim, or Mayan, and you're adding in the Mayim Shuvim to complete it to the 40 sa'ah. That will first of all present the problem, because you just distinguished here to say Rabbi Lezer's authorship was, in the case of Nachtomim, differentiated from that of Mikvaot, because Nachtav Shel Nachtomim was Midrabanan, and the case in Mikvaot was the Oraita. But now we find out that they're both Dinim Dirabanan. If that's the case, that distinction doesn't hold. Vaot, Hamar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Bidav Shel Matechet, Machloket, that the Dav Shel Nachtomim that we're speaking about in the case before, the machlok between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim was not about a wood flatter or a flat piece of wood, but rather a flat piece of metal. Because by a flat piece of wood, as we noted before, there is no din tuma. This is the Rashbam's proof that the Gemara's conclusion is that by flat pieces of wood, there's no tuma whatsoever. And that's why the Gemara changed the machloket over there to be about a flat piece of metal. As we noted before, metal is not learnt out from Parshat Shmini, but rather Parshat Midyan. Therefore, it's mekabel tuma, even if it's a flat surface. So now, that's the machloket here between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim, in the case of the Daf Shel Nachtomim, is you have a metal kli, which is mekabel tuma, mido uraita, and now you affixed it to the wall. Does affixing it to the wall take away its status as a kli? Or not take away its status as a kli, but clearly we're talking about a machloket at a doraita Torah level. And that also presents a problem, because you indicated that Rabbi Lezer's opinion here was the kula only because it was a din d'rabbanan, based on Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Chanina's clarification or qualification of that case of Dachshel Nachtomim. We're talking about a machloket d'oraita. So it's clear here that Rabbi Eliezer of Dachshel Nachtomim cannot be the author of the Tosefta Mikvaot. Mar says, so therefore it must be la'olam rabbanan. It must be the rabbanan that argue on Rabbi Eliezer in Dachshel Nachtomim. They must be the author of the case in Mikvaot. Vishaini she'iva d'rabbanan. Now we can explain it the opposite way around. The reason the Rabban are machmir by Dafshel Nachtomim is because that is a Doraita law. That is a Torah law. And by the case of Mikvaot, which is a rabbinic din, over there they were makil. So over here they say, whether you affixed it before you made it into a kli, whether you affixed it after you made it into a kli, it still is mikabel tuma according to the Rabbanan of Dafshel Nachtomim. By the case of Mikvaot, which Maim Shuvim is only a din de Rabbanan, over there, they allowed, if you were fixed it to the ground first and then carved into a kli, that'll be fine. If you first made it into a kli and then only afterwards attached it, that will be problematic. Gemara says, but ihochi, if the distinguishing factor here is doraita d'rabbanan, afilu chakuko l'sof kavo nami, then why in the case where you first made it into a kli and then attached it to the ground, why isn't that kasher by the case of mikvot? The distinguishing factor is doraita versus d'rabbanan. The midoraita should be machmir and say it never gets a status of mechuber the karka. In the case of mikvot, it should always have the status of mechuber the karka. Why are you distinguishing in the case of mikvot between whether it was first a kli or if it was only made a kli after it was attached to the ground? Gemara says, shani hotam dika tarot kli alav bitalush. Over there, they were machmir by the case where it already gained a status of kli when it was detached, then they didn't allow you to attach it to take away that status. As the Rashbam notes over here, once it has the status of a kli, in the cha shiva gedola mizu, there's no greater drawing or the institution the Rabbanan of Maim Shuvim is applicable to kelim. And so what they didn't want you doing is taking kelim and affixing them to the ground and saying, oh, now it's mechuber karka, it works, because people would make a mistake to think that any kli would be fine with regards to this issue of Maim Shuvim. So the Gemara now says, we have concluded that the Rabbanan of Dachshel Nachtomim or the authors of our Tosefta Mikvaot. Now, moving forward, we have a separate question, which is, by Rav Yosef, make shamim, rainwater, shechishev aleim ladiach et ha'itstroblin, that he had in mind for them to clean the itstroblin, which we saw in our Mishnah. We saw the different opinions about what the itstrobl was in the Mishnah, but the majority opinion was that it was the base upon which the Rechayim sat. And so, given that that was originally a kli, and then Mechubar the Karka is now attached to the ground, what is the din with regards to this person's mindset when he says that he wants that rainwater to come down and wash the Itstroblim? Mahu Lizraim, or Mahu Lehechshir Zraim. Does that work in terms of being Machshir Zraim? Hechshir the Kabel Tuma is a concept that exists based on the Parshiot Torah in Shmini that tell us that when it comes to food items or foodstuffs, that you have to have it be primed in order to be mekabel tuma. The way that those items become primed to be mekabel tuma is to have them be washed by one of the liquids that the Torah considers to be a liquid. That is primarily water, but there are six other liquids that the Torah classifies as liquids. And if any one of those seven liquids wash over the item, then it becomes primed or ready to be mekabel tuma. There's an additional drusha over there, which it says there, v'chiyutan mayim. If water is poured over these items, the verb that is used there is yutan. Yutan is a passive verb, which means that it has nothing to do with you pouring the water over these items, but rather that water passed over these items. But despite the fact that we read it as yutan, it's spelled as yitain in the Torah. And therefore, Chazal have a drasha that it's yutan dumya de'itain. That even though it can happen by itself, it has to be similar to itain, which is the active verb of placing water or liquids over these items. And that means that the only time that something is mukshar the kabel tuma, is primed to accept tuma, when a liquid washes it, is if you want that liquid to wash it. So if you don't want that liquid to wash it, or you have no intention for that liquid in a positive sense to wash it, then it will not be makshirit the kabel tuma. And that's what it says, that it has to be yutan dumya deitain. That it can happen passively, but it has to be similar to you actively putting it on, which is that it's with your consent. Now, as the Mishnayot tell us, that doesn't mean literally that you have to want the water to wash this item. It simply means that you have to want the water for whatever purpose it is. For instance, over here, you want the water to wash the itstroblin. Now, the water that you want, or to do something, has to be taking care of a kli, or something that's detached from the ground. If you want the water to come and wash something that is a kli, then as a byproduct of that, it also washes your food items. In that case, it will succeed at being makshir at the kabel tuma. And so that's the nature of the question of Yosef over here, is you have rain that falls on the itstroblin. What is the status of this itstroblin? If the itstroblin is considered to be mechubar lekarka, attached to the ground, then it will not have a din of being makshir the kabel tuma, because you only had in mind for something that was attached to the ground. On the other hand, if the itstroblin is considered to be a kli, then if you want the water to wash that kli, then it will also succeed at being makshir the zraim. And so Rabbi Yosef's question is the itstroblin considered to be mechuber the karka or not mechuber the karka? According to the Rashbam over here, this is a more general question, which is you have a kli that was originally a kli, and then you mechaber it, then you attach it to the ground. What is its status vis-a-vis hechsher the kabel tuma? And so it's asking, in the position of the Rabbanon in our Mishnah, who say that the itstroblin gets sold along with the house, when you sell the house, the itstroblin goes with there because it is classified as being mechubar the karka for the sale of the house. How mechubar the karka is it? Is it mechubar the karka enough that we classify it as being karka, and therefore it will not be makshir the kabel tuma, the water that you want to wash it will not be makshir the kabel tuma, or does it still have a status of a kli? And in having a status of a kli, then it will be makshir the kabel tuma. That's the nature of the question according to the Rashbam. It's a general question about something that's talush, l'sof mechubar, what is the din? It used its strobin as an example, but it'd be true of any kli that you attach to the ground, what would it be its status? You can see here in the Baalei Tosafot that they disagree with that generalization of the question here, and they say, Peirush HaKuntres, the Rashbam says, d'chol talush l'sof chibro mi ba'ilei. The question relates to any case of a kli that you attach to the ground. L'inyan hechshir zreim, v'alibi d'rabbanan d'machteshet. And if we're going to the Rabbanan in our Mishnah, who say that when it comes to the itstroblin, it is considered to be sold with the house. But when it comes to the machteshet, the mortar that was attached to the ground, they think it's still considered to be talush and still to be a kli. So what is the status of something that was detached and then attached? Does it have a status of karka or does it have a status of kli? Is it like the itstroblin that is sold with the house? Or is it like the machteshet, which retains its status as a kli? That's the nature of the question according to the Rashbam. The Reed disagrees with that and suggests over here that the question is particularly according to the Rabbanan of Daf Shel Nachtomim. According to the Rabbanan, who just said by Daf Shel Nachtomim, when you affix it to the wall, it doesn't have a status of Mechubar. And that's the question here. You have the Rabbanan by Nachtomim saying that when you affix the board to the wall, it's not considered to be Mechubar the Karka. You have the Rabbanan in our Mishnah who say that when it comes to a Machteshet, you have a mortar that was detached, and then you attach it to the ground. It has the status of a kli, and it does not get the status of mechuber the karka. What about an itstroblin? You have an itstroblin, which does get sold along with the house, but it's different than a machteshet or a daf shel nachtomim, because the itstroblin stays in place permanently. Once you've made it into a kli and then placed it, you don't really move it. Unlike a machteshet or a daf shel nachtomim, which still are kelim and can be moved and will be moved, by an itstroblin, once you put it in place, you leave it in place. So why do the Rabbanan in the Mishnah say that it's sold with the house? Do they believe that's because it has a status of mechuber the karka? Or is that because even though it has a status of a kli, because it's affixed in that manner, even though it retains its status as a kli, it's still considered to be part and parcel of the house? And so that's the question here, specifically about itstroblin, according to the Rabbanan of Nachtomim, and therefore he sees it as a much more particular question rather than a general question that the Rashbam sees. Gemara says, Aliba de Rabbi Eliezer, according to Rabbi Eliezer, who says, chanting affixed to the ground as a din of karka, loti boiloch. Here, there's no question at all, because of course he believes that everything mechuber dekarka is mechuber dekarka, even if it was talush or chakako, and then you attach it to the ground, it still would have a din of mechuber dekarka. So certainly over here, the strobling will have a din of being mechuber dekarka, and therefore it would not have a status of being machshir the kabel tumah, because you don't have the water washing something that is a kali. So according to the Rashbam, this refers to Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, because Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah says kol mechuber dekarka. He makes a generic statement that anything that's attached to the ground has a din of mechubar, and that's what the Gemara is referencing to over here. Whereas for the Ri, it's referencing to Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah of Nachtomin, where he says clearly that when you attach the board to the wall, that's classified as mechubar de karka, and that's what the Gemara is referencing to over here. You see clearly from there that Rabbi Eliezer believes when you attach something, affix something to the karka, it has a din of karka. Kiti Bailach Alib de Rabbanan. The question is according to the Rabbanan. Which Rabbanan is this machlok between the Rishbam and the Ri? As to whether referring to the Rabbanan of our Mishnah or referring to the Rabbanan of Daf Shel Nachtomim that say, Damrei Enu Kekarka, that say that doesn't have a din of karka, my. I mean that either by Daf Shel Nachtomim they say when you attach it, it doesn't get a din of karka, or by the case of Machteshir Akbua, it doesn't get a din of karka. What's the din over here? Teiku. That's an unresolved issue. We don't know what their reasoning is, or their thesis behind why it sold with the house. So the Gemara leaves it as a teiku with regards to this position of the Chachamim. As the Rashbam says over here, we don't know if the reasoning behind the Chachamim is the fact that they really believe that anything that is mechuba de karka after the fact is not classified as being kakarka. Everything is considered to be talush, and its troublin is actually an exception to the rule. Even though it was originally talush, and now mechubar, the only reason that it gets sold with the house has nothing to do with the fact that it's classified as being mechuber de karka, but rather has to do with the fact that it is fixed in place, and most people would leave that in that position, and therefore it's considered to be a part and parcel of the sale of the house. But the implications of that would be that when it comes to Hechsher Zra'im, over there, Humukshar the Kabul Tumad, its troubling will be considered to be talush and not mechubar. Or, though the Chachamim believe that, like Rabbi Eliezer, that something that is originally talush and now is mechubar has a din of kikarko. It has a din of being like the ground. But the reason that machtesher akvua in the Mishnah is not sold along with the house is because they believe mocher ba'ayin ra'ah mocher, that the mocher sells with a miserly fashion, and therefore it didn't include the machteshet. So that's the question being posed according to the Rashbam and left as a teiku, which is, what is the din of talush l'sof mechubar according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah? Do they believe that things that are talush and then mechubar are not considered to be mechubar, they remain talush? And Yitzroblin has that same din, but it's included in the sale because it's kviya, it's fixed in place and people don't tend to move it. Or do we say that they really believe, like Rabbi Eliezer, that things that were talush and then mechubar are mechubar, but the reason in the case of our Mishnah where they don't include these items is because they believe mocher b'ayin ra mocher. And the nafkamina between those two positions would be the case of Zra'im. Is the Tzroblim considered to be mechuba de karka, like Rabbi Eliezer's position, and therefore it would not be machshir de kabel tumah when you wanted the water to wash it? Or is it considered to be talush, even though it's included in the sale, and therefore it would be good enough to allow the waters to prime the ochel, because of the fact that you're washing something that's considered to be a kli or something that's considered to be talush? According to the Ri, the teiku is that with regards to the Chachamim of Nachtomim, where they clearly say that talush ulusof mechubar is classified as being talush, but we know that there are things like a wall by Hechsher Zra'im, that once the wall is built, even though it was originally talush, it's considered to be mechubar. And the question is, it's Stroblin, where does it fall in that spectrum? It's not a machteshet, it's not a daf shel nachtomim, which were clearly kelim and then affixed afterwards. There we know for sure they believe that it's considered to be talush, and that would be the case by Hechsher Zra'im as well. It's not like the wall, where the wall is considered to be mechubar after it was built, even though it was talush originally, because it becomes a permanent fixture and a part of the karka. So then it's stroblin, where does it sit? It originally was a kli, but now it's affixed, and affixed in a more permanent way than he would suggest that a mechteshet or a daf shel nachtomim is. It sits between those two, and we're uncertain as to the way Chachamim view it. We know with regards to mechira of the bayit, they think it's considered to be mechubar. We know with regards to issues of Tuma that they probably would classify it as being Talush. The question is, in the case of Heksha, the Kabbal Tuma, what is its status? That's the question of its Troblin, is that by the case of the Mishnah, the reason that it's included in the sale is because they do consider it to be Mechuba the Karka, and therefore it would be considered Mechuba the Karka for Heksha Herzeraim. Or the reason is that they don't consider it to be Mechuba the Karka, but the reason that it is included or not included in the sale, do with that Mocher Ba'ayin Yafa Mocher. That's what the Gemara leaves as a Teku. Shalach Le Rav Nechemia, Braid Rav Yosef, the Rabba Braid Rav Huna Zute. Rav Nechemia, the son of Rav Yosef, sends to Rabba, the son of Rav Huna, the little one or the younger one, the Nardo. Ki Atia Hach Itadala Kamach. When this woman reaches you, Agva Iser Nichse Afilu Mitstroble Direchaim. You should give her the tenth of the possessions, even from the base of the mill. So over here, Iser Nichasim is something that we bumped into in Ketubot, which is that when it comes to the daughters that are left after the father passes away, that we want to provide them with a dowry so that they can get married. How do we know how much to give of the father's estate towards the dowry of these daughters that were left after their father passed away? So if the father already married off a daughter in his lifetime, then we use that as the paradigm or precedent, and then we would give the subsequent daughters the same amount so that they would have an equivalent dowry to the daughter who already got married while the father was still alive. If we don't know what the father would have given, then there is a standard which is Isur Nechasim. It's a tenth of the possessions are given towards the dowry of the daughter. So now those Isur Nechasim only get taken out of Karka. They only get taken out of items that are classified as real property, just like the Ketubah, and many aspects of the Ketubah and the Tanaic Ketubah are only taken out of items that are considered to be real property. So what he's saying over here is the Isur Nechasim, which this girl is entitled to, out of the father's estate because she wants to get married and now she's entitled to a dowry, you should take that out of the real property. Included in those items of the real property is this strobe shel rechaim, is this base of the mill, because it is classified as karka, which means that he's paskening like Rabbi Eliezer, that it has a din, the chole mechuber the karka, harihu ke karka, anything that's attached to the ground is classified as being karka. And as the Rishbam points out, that the Rabbeinu Chananel says, v'kaim alon hochi, we pasken like this, the hot late day mandubaligalo. Nobody argues on the position that he's taking here. The Gemara states it as a fact, does not bring any dissenting opinion. And therefore, it means that we do pasken like Rabbi Eliezer, that kol mechuber the karka has a din of karka, vis-a-vis the Isur Nechasim, or vis-a-vis the issues of the Ketubah. Though you don't have to necessarily agree with the position of the Rabbeinu Chananel that this is supportive of Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, because even according to the Chachamim, when you sell the house, the Stroblin goes along with it. So even if you don't deem it to be mechuber the karka, in a transactional sense, we treat the Itstroblin as if it is karka, and that might be what is being said over here, that even according to the Chachamim, you would collect from this like it is real property, because of the nature of the way that we treat the Itstroblin in the sale of a house, and not that necessarily we're paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, that kol mechuber the karka, harihu ki karka, which is the conclusion of the Rabbeinu Chananel as well as the Rashbam. Now, as the Rashbam points out over here, and we noted this numerous times in the Gemara in Ketubot, as well as in other places, that in the time of the Geunim, that they put in a takana in place that said that when it comes to the Ketubah and its Tnaei Ketubah, one does not only have the right to collect from real property, but even from Metaltalim. And that had to do with the shift in the nature of the way that people stored wealth or made money. In the time of the Gemara, it was very focused on land ownership and property, and therefore that was seen as the ultimate stored value or collateral for paying of items. But by the time you get to the period of the Geonim, the many of the Jews are now traders or merchants, and they can be extremely wealthy and have no real property, only have one house, and that all their value is not stored in property, but rather in money or merchandise, and therefore they changed or put in place a takana that allowed the Ketubah to be collected from Mitaltulim, not just from real property. So that extends to the Ketubah and the Tnei Ketubah. As the Rashbam points out over here, that Isur Nechasim is not exactly like the Tnei Ketubah, and therefore it's not covered or governed by that Takana of the Geonim. And that means that even after the Takana of the Geonim, one would only be able to take the Isur Nechasim, or the dowry, out of real property, and not out of Mitaltulim, even though the Ketubah itself, and some of the other Tnaim, the conditions of the Ketubah, would be collected from Metaltalim post the Takana of the Geunim. Amar Rav Ashi, Ki Avinu Beit Rav Kahana, When we were in the Beit Midrash of Reb Kahana, Magvin Afilu Me Amlo Debate. We would even take it out from the Amlo, the way that the Belei Tosafot and the Rashbam translated over here means Mischirut, from the rental income of the houses. The word today in modern Hebrew, Amla, means fees, but over here in the Gemara, it means the Schirut, the rental income from the properties. Although the Rabbeinu Gershom here does bring an alternate explanation, which is, he brings Mischiruta Batim, that's the garbage or fertilizer that they throw out the doors, but that is also considered to be like real property. That's an alternative explanation brought by the Rabbeinu Gershom, though most of the Rishonim think that it refers to Schirut Batim. Now, these properties are considered to be karka, which would make them available for collection of Isur Nechasim or other items that are collateralized by the property of the deceased individual. So what he's saying is that rental income has a din like karka, has a din like real property. Now, as the Balei Tosafot point out, if the rental income has already been earned, then it's not karka anymore. That's already metaltalin, it's divided up amongst the children. Creditors can't go after that money because that money has already now been converted into metaltalin. But rather, what it means is rental income that is owed. Meaning, if there are people living in the property who will owe rental income, that rental income is considered or classified as real property. So it's basically earned rental income that has yet to be paid. That is classified as being like karka, and therefore creditors could go after that money or that value in order to collect, as well as Nisan or Chasim or Ktubah, all the other items that collect out of real property. This would have the same classification as real property,